B3. Number 17B.
Now, let's look again at the same situation, namely a problem popping up from another aspect and therefore meeting another argument that is innate in the old paradigm. From the point of view of Christianity as life and love. As life and love. There, we have in the old paradigm what? Christianity is always at the point of man. The counterfeit is therefore a mortal. It's therefore there where we make a problem very personal as belonging to a mortal. Here it is where we say, I have a problem. Where we begin to personalize a problem. We don't consider the problem as impersonal, as just a counterfeit of truth, as in the Christ translation. Here we go even a step further and say, I have a problem. Not you, I have it. And with that comes all sorts of things with it that we say, well, this is my problem. Why did it hit me? We wouldn't mind if it would have hit the other one, you know. We are not such Christians that we wouldn't mind if that problem would have hit somebody else, but we are very sorry about ourselves that it has hit us. You know how it you hear it, why do I have that problem? Really, with a kind of reproach to God Almighty, you know, I didn't really deserve it. There are people who are far worse than I am. Why didn't it hit them? Why should it hit me? Why should I have it? I have been so good and I have tried so much. Why should it hit me? Constantly that why me, why not others? Both attitudes are wrong. And in that old paradigm, we then make another wrong conclusion or reasoning, and we say, where did I go wrong? And you hear that all over. And somebody has a problem and doesn't know quite how to deal with, they say, what did I do wrong? They don't say, what is wrong? What did I do wrong? And so we begin a self-condemnation and feel that we are not really good, that something is very bad with us, so we don't know what, and so we try to personalize also the cause of the problem. So not only the form of the problem we make personal, but also the cause of the problem we personalize, and actually both is wrong. And therefore, also, you have so often that saying, it is so much easier to help somebody else than oneself. So often you hear that, well, I can help others, but I can't help me. And I don't believe that. I feel it's much easier to help oneself than it is to help somebody else, if we approach it scientifically. Because in both cases, it hasn't anything to do with me nor with the other one. The moment we feel that the problem belongs to me or to the other, we have anyway started on our own basis. Because evil is never a person, place, or thing. So this is the old paradigm from which then one tried to work, and one tried in the old paradigm then to work in the way that one was saying, all right, here I am, I have a problem, now let's correct that with truth, and so we would feel, therefore we must realize that there is one truth, and that truth is also my truth. And we make again the mistake of making also truth personal. It's my truth, I also have an intelligence, mine is my intelligence. And make it personal, because we always have to see what we mean with my. I also have spiritual sense, and with I we mean a person, a spiritual sense. And so we make, though we try to solve it on a wrong basis. The new paradigm would ask us to handle that situation quite differently. It would not say, what is my problem? And then investigate the problem. It would say, it's not my. Whatever the problem is, it's never my. And so it's never I have a problem. It's always to see that the problem is impersonal. And so we begin first by impersonalizing the problem, to free the problem from a personal I and to put it right into principle. And that is why it is just as easy to heal oneself as it is to heal somebody else. Or I would say easier, because with oneself one doesn't have also to convince another mortal mind to accept the truth. We are willing to accept it anyway if we want to get rid of our ails and sickness. But naturally it is difficult to heal oneself, very difficult, if one thinks, I have a problem. If one thinks the pain one has is my pain, then it is very difficult, because one feels the pain constantly, and then it's difficult to get rid of it. But if one starts out by seeing that that pain doesn't belong neither to me, nor to my body, nor to my sensation, nor to anything else, that that pain doesn't belong at all to anything that has to do with my identity, my individuality, we free ourselves first of that sense that we have to get rid of a problem. We don't have to get rid of a problem. It is not our problem. We never have a problem. We never possess a problem. A problem is always a belief, an impersonal belief that there is something that is opposite to God, that there exists something, that's our life sense, that there exists something that is opposed to God and therefore is not at the point of love or fulfillment. So we handle that by seeing that problem is not my problem. Therefore it's whose problem? It's so to say principle's own problem. Principle has to deal with it. And the moment I lay it back to principle, to the universal principle, the moment I do that, I naturally see that not I have to get rid of the problem, but that principle is that which has no problem. And it's completely free from me. Therefore, I see that that which appears to be my individual problem is not at all an individual problem, but a universal belief in a counterfeit. So we handle not my problem, we handle the universal belief in a counterfeit. You see? And actually you get much freer. The moment you can see that, you feel, oh, I'm not such a bad boy, I'm not really such a sinner, and so on. I'm neutral, so to say. The mortal is neutral. That what's going on is the universal, and not individual, the universal facts of being. And those universal facts of being come to each individual. The universal facts come to each individual as universal facts. So we can't say, actually, well, error hits me in a way it doesn't hit the other. That's actually not true, because error can't hit me in a way that it doesn't hit the other, because error is a counterfeit of truth, and truth is universal, and therefore every counterfeit is a universal belief that there is something opposed or contrary to God. And so I begin to handle that. I begin to handle that, and I can see that there is a universal law at work. Then we may handle it from love and life, that the problem is not the problem, but a universal law, a universal fact that hits each individual and says, you have to handle it. That's life. positively seen, we can see that the universal idea, which operates universally in a universal plan, wants to have, now we come to life, wants to have an individual expression. Just as a universal law like 5 times 5, 25, 5, wants to have individual expressions. It's 5 times 5 cows, it's 25 cows, and sometimes 5 times 25 billions of deaths. It comes in an individual way. 5 times 5, 25 is a universal law in arithmetic, but it shows itself forth in infinitely individualized phenomena and ways. So can you see how we correct there an old false paradigm, a false approach, so to say, to the problem? It's very hard to feel I have a disease. I am to be blamed for the cause of that disease. If I had been better, I wouldn't fall under the curse of this disease. That's very hard. And to free oneself and say, is disease my individual possession? Has disease not existed long before I was here? Or even before man has been here? Plants were diseased. Animals had disease. Therefore, disease is a universal belief. It has certainly nothing to do with me. So I put it right back into a counterfeit of perfection. And as I put it right back into the counterfeit, as a counterfeit of perfection, I go out from perfection. See, but perfection is so universal that it wants to be accepted individually by everyone. So that everyone is the individual expression of the universal fact. And this is actually what is at work when we have a problem. Can we impersonalize it to that extent that we see this is like going to school and the teacher says, now here is a wrong calculation, you put it right. He presents the wrong calculation and does not say, you have made that wrong calculation. Here it is, now you put it right. Then the student would not feel that he had made that wrong calculation. But he is asked, so to say, to see the truth about it. Yes? All right. So we can go further to the next one, to science, truth and love. And again, see, what is the old paradigm? How did we consider any problem? Science is the truth about all things. It's always positive. The wrong attitude one can have is that one says, this problem is a negative problem. You make out of a truth a negative, can't say a negative fact, that's not true, but something negative. And we consider what comes to us as very negative, and we strive very much to overcome that negative aspect with a positive aspect. We feel again it is a personal attack on us. And as it comes as a negative problem, we feel under the pressure of making a demonstration. And that's horrible. That's horrible. You just look around how Christian Scientists make them very miserable by always trying to make a demonstration. They always feel under the terrific pressure, under the pressure of having to make a demonstration, even of having to make it. So they are constantly under that pressure, and therefore there is no wonder that under such a pressure they go really from one problem to the next. It's one long chain of one problem coming after the next, And when one is solved, the next problem arises and pops up, and so one feels to have a whole long chain of solving problems. So Christian Science is not a problem-solving science, so to say. Well, in the best way, naturally it is, but on the problem, usually people understand the negative problem. What it is that finally you have a sense that there is a fatalistic mystery going on, where you are never quite sure what is popping up next, but one has a sense that you never know what comes next, and all that is so wrong. Naturally, if one puts too much stress on the healing side of Christian Science, then that naturally raises and cultures slowly and slowly a consciousness which accepts and expects something wrong to happen. Whereas if we would culture a sense of Christian Science from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science, then we are not going to expect some problem to pop up all over the place. Then we are going to expect something that is happening within the new paradigm. Now, what is the new paradigm? Namely, we expect that constantly a new birth is going on, that constantly something is popping up, but always a new idea is popping up, that the one infinite truth containing all truths therefore bring forth through the revelation of truth always newer insights, always higher insights, and therefore always new facts, new revelation, new inspiration. Therefore there is a constant flow of manifestation of truth. So it's truth in love. It shows that this constant manifestation of revelation do not pop up atomistically, just without any design, without any plan behind it. But they do come in such ordered way, in such constructive way, that one is necessary for the next one, and the next one fits into the preceding ones, and these together begin to fall into place, and so that looking back over the history of one's life, one can see that all these new ideas being born are not just isolated new facts and new insights, but they begin to link together, that they are tightly fitted together, forming one web of consistency where each one just is nicely synchronized with the other one, until finally you begin to perceive the whole plan, the whole design that is behind that one truth. Truth, love, the design of love. Truth revealing itself in new ideas, but always in the plan of love. This is true. This is absolutely true. What I'm telling you is not just a theory. It's something that if one has had a history in the idea, one begins to see more and more, more and more, one is so absolutely impressed by the beauty of it, because that plan of love cannot be outlined, cannot be seen ahead. Nobody knows the plan of love. We only know that there is a plan, and we only know how this plan comes into existence. But what the plan is, we do not know. We do not know. We have the faintest idea what is the next step in the line of spiritual evolution. We have the faintest idea. We do not know what experiences are waiting for us in order to push us into the right direction, so as to fit into the design of love. So this is a great adventure. That's why Mrs. Eddick speaks about the adventure of love. It's really love that is the biggest adventure, because adventure means there is a plan, a design, but we do not know the inner structure of that design yet. We do not know how that design is going to be designed. We don't know the inner outlines of it, But we know that if we start right, that we are led rightly in fulfilling that plan. Therefore, we can see that the problems that pop up are all there, not only to bless us, but have a much higher aim than to bless us. They have that higher aim which we always encounter in science, namely that they are there to glorify the principle of being. That principle love, that principle which has a plan, which has a design, those experiences which we go through are not only for our blessing, we also get something of it, but it's really for the blessing, so to say, of the whole plan of love. Principle wants to glorify itself and not to glorify the individual. And so again we can see even more, say, the beauty really of a science and of this absolute Christian science, because there we begin to see that our experiences are actually only serving for God's own plan, not only for our plan. And one feels, oh, actually I'm a tool of God. God uses me as a tool to bring out His plan. You see, can you see that we shouldn't stop at Christianity, at life and love, where we feel that whatever happens is an individual demonstration of the universal design. That's Christianity, life and love. But that we go further and see that we are only one little stone in the whole mosaic, and love pushes us into that place, into that whole mosaic, which is right for us, not to glorify us, but to bring out the beauty and wholeness of the plan of God. Therefore, we are an instrument of God. It's very impressive, this standpoint. One really feels then the bigness of one's mission within the whole. And see, it's not my mission. It's actually God working out and bringing out His whole plan, His own glory. Not my glory. Yes, so here we see how we could really take any kind of problem, and through those four aspects of absolute Christian science, really make out of a problem a terrific, big and wonderful thing, so that we could joyfully accept what God has in store for us. That we really accept the seven vials full of the last plagues and accept it, because we know we are not going to accept something that is negative, but that actually by accepting it and seeing behind it, we feel that we are enormously blessed by it. So, just to recapitulate those four standpoints, we can see, if we look at the problem from the point of view of the Word, we can see that the Word of life, truth and love makes us first aware that the problem is actually not a problem, but that it is something that shows us this spiritual need, that makes us aware of a spiritual need. At the point of Christ, truth, life and love, we feel that that problem is really not an erroneous state that needs to be solved, but that the solution is already there. The solution precedes the problem, and therefore we know that the situation that happens is nothing else but a way of truth to save us. It's the channel truth uses to save us. And at the point of life and love, we begin to see that we are working out with these problems not our individual case, but a universal law. That we are universally solving something. Every time we have an individual problem and solve it, we solve actually not an individual problem, but a universal belief. And the moment we see that, we can also see in the last column of science, truth and love, that everything that presents itself as a problem is a positive problem, is a positive experience, that it's there because God wants it to be there, because God wants to express itself in a higher way so as to glorify itself. If you see that, then you feel there is nothing harmful, nothing bad about the whole situation. We really can accept it happily and with great confidence. All right, we make a break here.